Okay, this is our last class for this program, and today we finish with the section on time in the first TSK book. Anybody actually, let me just ask, as I said at the very beginning of this program, I have a tendency to stay with the later books because those are the ones that I've worked with the most. But I found it very interesting, certainly, to be working with this first book. But I wonder if anybody has any thoughts. There are, as we've discussed, there are people who would say, "Well, the first TSK book, that's the real TSK, and everything else is commentaries." So I just wonder if people have any reaction having read through the first, this whole section of the first book in comparison to some of the other work we've done. Anybody want to say anything?
I find it more penetrating.
More penetrating. Can you say something about what that means, penetrating? Okay. It just asserts it. That's interesting. That makes sense to me. I do think that the later books, I hadn't thought about it quite that way, but I do think that the later books take more time, which is pretty much what you just said, to unfold what's being discussed. And in this case,
This cuts it open from the beginning.
Right. And it is more assertive. I think I've said before that when I've been in the position of being the editor on some of these things, when I've worked with Rinpoche, he will generally say, "Don't," or at least in the past, I mean, it's been quite a while, but in the past he would say, "Don't make assertions." suggest, propose, allow for the possibility that. But in this first book, I think it's a little more assertive. I think that's fair to say. So, anybody else want to say anything?
This is Michael.
Yeah.
They both have their own wondrous accessibility that I think I'm glad to return to the original one after the other one was kind of come down to my level more and lead me into familiar terrains of the self and then make something familiar open up into the extraordinary. TSK kind of leaves you out there more. If you don't do the exercises, you wonder what you're getting because it is so enigmatic. But especially the reading for this week, it's so profound. It's really exciting.
That's very nice. Say something about the profundity of this week. What really struck you?
Oh, me?
You, you, you.
Or anybody?
Well,
Well,
you responded.
It made it seem like there's a whole new world to discover, like the end of the time. It really makes me want to read the knowledge, and I think some of the online posts helped me understand the idea of the readout a little bit better. But it just ended with maybe a poetic. It just made time seem like I'd like to become better friends with it. I'm not sure there were particular insights profound in that way that I was able to grasp.
Okay, well, the idea
Promising, promising. Yeah.
the idea of making friends with time, I think, is actually very nice. I like that. Anybody else want to say anything about the flavor of working with this book instead of the other books? Nope. Okay. Well,
say something, Jack?
Oh, okay, Sudaba. Sudaba? Hello?
She has no symbol here beside her name.
Hmm.
When she lost it.
I see. She would say. What she's saying is so profound that. Well, I don't know. Okay, if Sudaba becomes available again. Oh, here's I see a note from Karen. It says private, but I don't know that it's really meant to be. Karen says it was harder to get into the reading and to do the practices than in Love of Knowledge. Yeah, well, people do sometimes have that experience. The practices, I do think maybe one thing I would say about the practices, and we will talk about and actually do this practice a little, I think, Transcendence of Pointings. A lot of them anyway, ask you to go right to the point. It's like, okay, now just do it. You used to do things this way, but enough of that. Now let's do it this new way. Whereas some of the well, we often rely on the TSK practices, even when we're working with the other books, because they are really nice. Well, they're very good practices. So are practices in some of the other books, no question. But some of these practices, maybe especially well, I was going to say especially in the time section. I'm not sure, but in any event, I think some of them just say, well, stop doing things your ordinary way and do it this other way. And of course they tie into the readings also, and Transcendence of Pointings does too. So Bruce has a chat that people can look at. It's a kind of a framing and a transmission, and the others help to unfold and embody that transmission. Yeah, I think that's the sense that people sometimes express when they say, and this is a kind of a Buddhist traditional way of saying it, that this is the root text, and then the others are commentaries. Yeah, I do think that there's something very, very. I don't know what's the right word. It's like you're being introduced to something. It's like I remember one time many years
Many
ago.
years ago.
Whoops, somebody has their speaker on. No, we're okay now. Okay. One time many years ago I had a dream. It was the most symbolic dream I've ever had, and certainly won't go into the content. But in this dream I started off down in a cavern. And then I made my way up into the daylight. And when I reached daylight, I was in a park, somebody came up to meet me. And they were my guide, and I mean, they were a friend or a guide or whatever. But this first TSK book is kind of like that. It's like you open the door to a new realm, and the book comes along to greet you. And says, here, right this way. Okay, so Bruce is still saying commentary is a little bit too weak for the other books. Okay, well, I do think the other books, I mean, of course, because I've been involved in them, I'm very fond of the other books. But so I don't mean to downplay them.
It's like the other books invite you in for tea,
Yeah.
where you can discuss it at your leisure.
Yeah, and then gradually, the conversation takes some unexpected turns, right? Okay. Okay, well, let's talk about transcendence of pointing. That's really where I want to focus us today, and set it up so we can do the exercise for a bit and discuss that. So the basic idea with transcendence of pointings is that everything points to everything else in the readout, right? Everything presents itself as part of a readout, or that's actually probably saying it the wrong way around. When things appear, they do so within a readout. And everything in that readout points to everything else in the readout. And that's a model, and I'm going to refer to the other books for a moment. That's a model that Rinpoche presents, or a kind of a structure that Rinpoche presents. Sudhabal, one moment. In a number of books, and he uses different language. I'm not saying that it's exactly the same in each case, but what he talks about here as readout is related to what he talks about in Love of Knowledge as the logos, and what he talks about in Dynamics of Time and Space as the field communique. I think those three themes are all quite similar. And if you're interested in exploring this idea of readout further, that would be a possibility, is to look at the discussions in those two books. Now, Sudhabha, you did get disconnected in the chat. Sudhabha saying she didn't get to hear her comments about what she shared. But it's worse than that, Sudhabha. We didn't get to hear what you shared.
That's all right. Please let go.
Okay. We just thought it must be too profound for ordinary speech because. Okay. So we're talking about the readout and the fact that in the readout everything points to everything else, and so this exercise, transcendence of pointings, is. In essence, it's about recognizing that structure and trying to just go right to that way of seeing things, seeing everything as a readout. Now, another way that Rinpoche talks about that I have always found very helpful is in terms of a story. Everything shows up as part of the story. And what that suggests is it's something like a novel or a dream. When you open up the pages of a book, if you still do it that old-fashioned way, when you open up the pages of a book and start to read, it's like entering a world. You could say entering a readout, and I guess there's some sort of a play on words there with readout, but and novels, but. You, as long as you're reading in the book, you're engaged in the story, and then you close the book, and it's gone. If it's a good book and you're touched by it, it kind of continues to play itself out in your head, at least for a while. But that is the basic idea, I think, of a readout, and of the fact, again, that in the book, everything in the book points to everything else. I just happened to read something yesterday that was referring to the fact that Sherlock Holmes plays the violin, right? So if we are reading about Sherlock Holmes playing the violin, the violin playing is no more true and no less true than Sherlock Holmes. Right? Now, in our ordinary understanding, there's a big difference between a novel and our ordinary experience. But the point of the readout principle is that there really isn't any difference. Or, of course, there are differences, the differences, this would take a long time to talk about, I suppose, but it's like if you're reading a novel, and in the novel the characters go outside and it's raining, nobody gets wet. At least you don't get wet. Whereas if you are, whereas if you step outside and it's raining, you get wet. So that's a difference. But the quality of the difference is it's not fundamental. It's just that the particular readout in which you're engaged, going outside has the in the rain has the consequence of getting wet. In a different readout, it doesn't because you're not involved in the same way. So, what is it that it gets read out, and what is it that gets pointed to? What points back and forth? Well, the fundamental thing, of course, and this has come up very clearly in this reading, and it comes up again and again and again in the TSK vision, is the existence of a self and its world, right? So in this readout, in virtually every readout, there is a self that is having experiences and is in its world where the experiences take place. And the self points towards the world, and everything in the world points back towards the self, and the experiences we have point toward the objects in the world and the one who's having the experience, and that's just how it is. So the question is, if that's the readout, and everything points back and forth, self and world, world and self, experience, sensory experience, thoughts, everything refers back and forth. Is there any way to go to a different readout? And that's not exactly what this exercise is doing. It's not saying, well, give up that particular understanding, that particular story, that particular field communiqué. Let's use that expression for a moment just to vary it. It's not saying just drop the old one and pick up, excuse me, pick up a new one. It's saying we can see the readout as a readout. We can see how everything points towards everything else, and we can, in seeing that, we can transcend the pointing. And then the question, of course, is how do you do that? And that's always, it seems, the question. If you're reading, and people were saying that in this book, the invitation is very direct, very, in a way, insistent. The TSK book says, now just do this. You can do it. It's very different. Things are not the way you think they are. Time is it makes is available in a very different way. So why not just do it? And it's challenging. And there are times when we get a sense of it, and times when we don't. So the question is how to do the challenging. And I think that the answer that's suggested in with respect to this particular exercise, is in the first paragraph of the commentary. So it's on page 206. So Rinpoche, when he's talking about transcendence of pointings, he's saying here, mind and body can be challenged. So the mind has its role, very central role, and everything points back towards the mind as the one that's experiencing. The body has its role, very central role, everything points back toward the body as the locus, the place where we are, the center of experience. And then he says they can both be challenged. And then the next sentence is you could say kind of the best clue toward how you could try to do that. Their very appearance or appearing, and he puts appearing in italics, their very appearance or appearing and pointing is what challenges them. And then he describes that as an experiential insight about pointing. And I think that that's something really fundamental that we've been looking at throughout this program and some of the exercises we've done, and it very much relates back to exercise 16, the space-time knowledge on the conventional level, which is the exercise for that we were doing in the first few weeks. When you engage the appearing and the pointing rather than what's pointed out, then you're connected to the dynamic of time. So the idea of transcending pointings, it doesn't mean that you go somewhere else where no pointings are happening. It means that whatever is pointed out, there is also the activity of pointing. And it's when you're able to tune into that activity, the doing of that, then the things that get pointed out lose their substance. You know, they lose their thingness. You know, when you see everything as being pointing, you are freed from the consequences of what gets pointed out. You know? I was listening to a talk the other night. Someone here in the Nyingma community has written the novel, and he was discussing the novel, and he said that even now when he reads what he's written, it's very moving for him. He gets very involved in it. But you know, we could say it's something like being in the position of the author of a novel. And the novel is us. The novel is our lives, you know. And we are doing the writing, which is another way of saying we are doing the pointing. We are doing the appearing. And that's a little bit misleading way of saying it, because it's not that we are at the center of things, pointing everything else out. We too are what's pointed out. So we are the appearing. That's probably a better way of saying it. It's not that we're doing it, which is what the image of an author, I guess, suggests. It's not that we're doing it. The pointing is the doing, is the timing. And that's why I said it's like exercise 16. You put time at the center instead of the self, and you could refer that back to the object and its glow, which again is a way of not of decentering the self, so that the self is like the glow that's given with the object, or it's like what time presents. Or you could look at it in the other extreme. Another exercise we looked at was intimacy, right? Where you say everything is the self, which is another way really of decentering the self, because the self has no privileged position. So that's what the transcending of pointings exercise, I think, is about. And I would like to suggest that we do that for a few minutes. And then, and see what comes of it. If we have time.
Will you read us the instruction if we don't? I don't
Sure.
have my book.
I'm happy to read. I'm
Read
happy to read the instruction. Sure. Let's see. Okay. He starts off by talking about exercise 7, which is just watching the mind, thought, emotion, body interactions, all the things that come up in experience. So that's the raw material, you could say. Now, see if you, or a more comprehensive knowingness, can apprehend a new form of such interaction, which truly embraces the way in which both the mental and the physical are given as existing. It is a subtle mutual pointing. A readout sets up a mind and body which refer or point to each other. You start with an acceptance of mind, and it, via time, says, "I am mind. These are thoughts. That is a body." The same process applies when you start with the physical side of human embodiment. You can trace back and forth from point to point through such pointing. But in terms of a greater appreciation of timing, this pointing does not point to anything. There is not one thing related to another. So it's not the things, it's not what gets pointed out, it's the pointing. The pointing, the appearing, that's the focus. So let's do that for a few minutes, and then we'll discuss it. Okay, let's see if anybody has anything to say about that. Maybe I think I'll say something to start off with because it's something that always strikes me in this kind of practice. There's a tendency to say, well, it's always the same. Sure, everything points towards everything else, but there's always the self and its world, the self and its world, the self and its world, and it just gets kind of boring. But what always helps me out of that is a realization that it's the dynamic of that in each moment. That's where the aliveness is. That's where time is presenting itself, you could say. Okay, well, that's my comment. Somebody else want to say something about that practice just now?
It appears that self and world are a way of knowing.
I didn't quite hear that. Can you say it again?
A way of knowing. Is it useful to think of readout as a way of knowing?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I might want to say the readout is a knowing. I guess you'd say it's a way of knowing. You could say that, sure.
Well, the readout is a knowing, and the specific of self and world is a way of knowing.
Yes. Okay. Fair. Yes, absolutely. Self and world is a particular... It's actually... So there's two parts in the readout, and this is a little bit too simple, but there's what gets read out, and the self in its world definitely is the readout in that sense. And then in the readout, there's the reading out. And you could say that that's the point, you know, that it's the self wants to say, well, I'm the one who's reading out. But that itself is a part of the readout. And the actual reading out is not something that the self can own. And in the end, that's probably the single most important thing to say. That's not something that the self can own. Well, okay. Anybody else? Let me suggest something that is a way of taking this a little further, I think, and something you could practice with. And it's just directly from the book. It's on page 207. Let me bring it in so I can read it here. So he's talking about the transcendence of pointings as being an opening ourselves up to time. And he says, when we do that, time can act and speak more freely through us. Our speech and gestures become totally irrepressible and spontaneous, welling up from time, the dynamic center of our being. Everything we are and do becomes a readout of time in the special sense that it is a direct and overtly faithful expression of the inner structure of time itself. Initially, this may result in a surfacing of unpremeditated action perfectly suited to the situation at hand. Well, that's what I wanted to suggest as a kind of an ongoing practice over the break now, and that is that if you're tuned in to the appearing, tuned in to the pointing and not to what gets pointed out, then everything that you do is an expression of that pointing. Everything you do is itself an evocation of the dynamic power of time. And this is something that I, you know, I'm really trying to focus in now as I speak, and is something that I've pointed out in the past is true whenever you speak. There's a kind of a discovery, an unknown aspect of speaking where you don't really know what you're going to say next. You don't really know what the next word out of your mouth is going to be. That is an expression of the dynamic power of time. And if you can come from that timing, instead of working it out as a self doing the doing, if there can just be the doing without there being a self that does the doing, just be a reading out without there being a self who has to either be the author of the readout or the one who appreciates or enjoys it, that's that irrepressible, spontaneous, unpredictable quality of time that Rinpoche talks about here. And I think that would be the practice to work with. Of course, you may want to go back and work with other practices that we've done during the last few the last several weeks, the last couple of months. But the practice is letting yourself express the dynamic of time instead of controlling it. And that's a little scary, but that's the practice. So that's what my suggestion is. It's hard to put things into words and say, well, so this is the bottom line. This is what we've learned in the last 3 months. And that's not what I'm trying to do, but I am saying that this is a way of going forward. It's a way of letting yourself become the expression of time. And I think everybody can probably realize that we're not like that most of the time. We're something in us holds back. Something in us does not engage time. And if we did engage time with that immediacy, that spontaneity, life would be very different. So that's where I want to leave you. I'm kind of rethinking what we'll do next quarter for those of you who want to continue. But there will be a note about that. I'll send around an email, or Kathleen will, sometime fairly soon.